Good evening. It's 8 o'clock in San Luis Obispo. You're listening to KCPR, and this is Study Break. It's the 28th of October. I'm Lou Rinaldi, and along with Craig Hines this evening, we'll be interviewing Dr. Robert E. Kennedy, president of Cal Poly. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions for Dr. Kennedy, you might give us a call at 546-2289 right here at KCPR and get on Study Break and ask the questions. Craig, I'll let you start off.
Well, Dr. Kennedy, according to Mustang Daily, the trustees of the state colleges kind of threw a kink in the married student housing proposed to be built on state college property, but by a private concern. Can you clarify that?
Well, Craig, I'm not sure that a kink is the right word to use, but it was not anticipated what they did. They have delayed us because the program is going to have to wait until the next meeting of the Board of Trustees, which would be November the 26th, before we can present the answers to some of the questions which they raised at this last meeting. You see, our married student housing project, which we think is very critical and very essential, was approved by the Board of Trustees on two different occasions. Once in terms of a policy item that they did in fact believe that married student housing was a priority and that it should be included in the programs that would be supported by the trustees. And subsequently, because we were the first of the state colleges to come up with a plan for married student housing, we then had plans for married student housing approved. The schematic plans were actually approved by the Board of Trustees. And so at this last meeting, which was on Tuesday, one of the members of the Chancellor's staff, Mr. George Merrill, presented what they call an information item. And I had been assured by a number of people on the Chancellor's staff that there was no problem. All I had to do was to sit there and be quite relaxed and that there would be would go by swimmingly. And everything went along fine until all of a sudden someone of the trustees asked a question. And the question was, have there been any objections whatsoever to the proposal that a private enterprise be permitted to build married student housing on state land? Well, I had to honestly say that there had in fact been one letter written to Assemblyman Bill Ketchum protesting this. Well, we explained that, but that started the series of questions by trustees, and they begin to ask a number of searching policy questions. Would this in fact create a subsidy for housing? Would this mean that then other people who had already built housing in the area over the years, would they be suffering from the fact that we would have housing available at perhaps less cost than they would be able to rent for? Well, those were the kinds of questions, and as a result of this, we were advised to proceed with our negotiations with the private company, which is the Lyons Development Company, and but not to finalize the lease agreement until the next meeting of the trustees.
One thing that came up was in the newspaper article, it quotes you as saying, we'll have another Isla Vista on our hands if we don't do something. Then it goes on to say that Trustee Dudley Swim of Carmel said that we are not going to have our policies guided by hoodlums and gangsters. Can you clarify that that was something left out in the discussion?
Yes, there certainly was. My reference to Isla Vista was misinterpreted, and I did come back and say to Trustee Swim that I was sorry that it had been misunderstood, that my reference to Isla Vista was simply that as I understood it from having read the recent complete report to the regents on the subject of Isla Vista, was that much of the problem there was related to the fact that the administration at the University of California at Santa Barbara and the statewide administration of the university and that of the regents had failed to concern itself sufficiently about the housing conditions, the housing arrangements for students on the Santa Barbara campus over the past few years when it was having very rapid growth. And that, I said to Trustee Swim, was what I in fact meant when we would in fact maybe have another Isla Vista here. If we did not pay attention to the problems of providing adequate housing for students, 87% of our students, as you know, come from outside the county of San Luis Obispo, and so we have great numbers of them who are seeking adequate housing. He said, as a result of that little interchange of comments, that he thanked me for that further explanation and that he had not meant to infer that that Cal Poly students were in any way the kind of students who fell in that category that had been described in his comments earlier.
Very good. A reminder, if you're interested in talking with Dr. Kennedy, asking him a question or possibly offering a suggestion, we're here at Study Break. The number is 546-2289 at KCPR. You can give us a call and we'll talk to you right here. Dr. Kennedy, this thing with housing, that has a lot to do with enrollment, and Cal Poly's enrollment's been discussed over the last few days. An article appeared in the Telegram Tribune today regarding Cal Poly not growing anymore and the budget being cut accordingly. Can you explain something about that?
I'd be happy to, Craig. We have to make sure that we know that we don't really mean that Cal Poly won't grow anymore, but what we are saying is that the next budget, 1971-72, which was the budget that the trustees were considering on Tuesday in Los Angeles, was based upon an estimated enrollment by the chancellor staff of 12,000 full-time equivalent students during the academic year, the three quarters of the academic year, for that period, 1971-72. Now, 12,000 full-time equivalent students is the annual average. When we now talk about our enrollment, when somebody says, well, we have 12,370 students now enrolled, we're talking about individual students, and in the present year, on an annual average, it will be 11,700 full-time equivalent students. That's what we're budgeted for. My proposal to the chancellor, starting back in July, was that because of many problems related to the size of the rapid growth of the institution, that we should, in fact, hold the enrollment at Cal Poly for 71-72 to the present level, that we should not expand our enrollment next year. And I based that on a number of factors, including overutilization of our present campus, our laboratories, and many other things. I did not stress the local housing situation at that particular time. It wasn't until later, when I didn't seem to be getting any results in my campaign to hold the enrollment for 71-72, that I began to explain to them about the housing situation. And then, of course, as you know, the Mustang Daily, the Telegram Tribune, and others have taken up the matter of checking on available housing, the housing crisis in San Luis Obispo. And so at one of the meetings at the chancellor's staff, I went there fully prepared with all the clippings from the papers to show them about the housing crisis and explain all we had done. And so I received word officially, but not in writing as yet, that we would be permitted for 1971-72 to hold the enrollment and to 11,700 full-time equivalent students, and at the same time we would then have our budget reduced to that amount.
Right. We have a call, I believe, right now. This is Study Break. You have a question for Dr. Kennedy.
Yes,
go ahead.
I would like to know why new students have the privilege of pre-registering where present Cal Poly students do not have this privilege. I would also like to know if there's any pre-registering in sight for Cal Poly students.
We have studied the problem of registration many times, and we are going to work toward a pre-registration program. One of the problems with pre-registration and computer registration that's related to pre-registration, with which I am particularly familiar, because for 4 years I was vice president at Cal Poly's, at what was then Cal Poly's Kellogg Voorhees campus. We instituted a pre-registration program down there and computerized it, and it worked out very fine. We had all the students pre-register in the summertime by mail, and everything was fine, except that what happened is that the lines that you see at registration time, we had later, when the students were dropping and adding the courses that the computer had discovered, had laid out for them, you see, because they had disagreements with the computer. The computer frequently would schedule them for courses that, let's say a course at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They'd prefer not to take a course at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and so they would spend a lot of time trying to change this around. So pre-registration is a help, but it is no panacea. We are going to continue to work on registration, And I'm not satisfied with it, and I'm sure you're not from your question.
Yes, I have a kind of a suggestion. I don't know if this will work or not, but a lot of courses are series courses. Like engineers take, let's say, for example, math 141, 142, 143, 241, etc. If these students have a time, like at 1400, they have a class, a math class, could they possibly pre-register for the same math course, which would be the same amount of units, meeting on the same day at the same time next quarter, and so on. A lot of students take a lot of series courses like this. Well, English and, let's see, the history and major courses.
Well, I would have to say to you that the problem of sequence courses and the registration for those sequence courses, where in fact a student doesn't always know whether he is going to be able to register for the second or third in the sequence, because he's not sure that he's going to pass the first or second in the series, does in fact create some problems for some students. But I'm not absolutely certain that I follow you in terms of why it's necessary for the student to register for the course in advance at the same time in the day.
Well, I thought this would relieve some of the problems. I think it's pretty important that the student complete the series. If he has 141 math, let's say for instance, and he is not able to get 142 the next quarter because the classes are all closed, I think the student is left out. If he is more or less guaranteed, or not guaranteed, but pre-registering, would guarantee the student the 142 the next quarter, which is pretty important in like a math series. Skipping a quarter would do grave injustice for the student.
Well, you know, I hate to really admit that there is some phases of Cal Poly's administration and its operations which baffle me, but the fact is that I'm going to have to say say to you at this particular point that those people who are working on the registration, a committee of faculty and staff members and students, are going to have to continue to work on this and come up with solutions, because I don't wish to make commitments on this matter at this time while they're in the process of developing improved registration procedures. I hope you know what I mean. In other words, if I answer to you, yes, I think that's a great idea, it may in fact be proved to me quite substantially by the committee later on that I was wrong. I just as soon not say that, if you don't mind.
Thank you very much, President Kennedy.
Thank you for calling Study Break. Number is 546-2289. Line's open. Craig?
One thing about registration, this getting back to this thing, with we have lots of students, and we see that at registration. We were talking about limiting the size, that type of thing. That leads me to an area called parking. And we can chuckle about it and all that, but it's pretty serious when you're trying to get in into a classroom and you can't find a parking space, so you're 5 minutes late to class. So, Dr. Kennedy, can you go into some of the figures on parking? How many stickers were sold? How many spaces do we have? And some of the things you see in sight for alleviating some of the problem.
Well, one of the things, Craig, is because we keep all of this information in the computer program, and because we have so many problems to solve, as you know, we use our 360/40 computer for instruction as well as for administration and so on. We have placed priorities on the use of the computer. So at the present moment, anyway, I am I'm going to have to say to you, I'll come back to that question. I understand there's a call. I would say that. That I don't have up-to-date fall quarter information, but I can give you in a moment statistics on the spring quarter,
okay,
on the permits and the parking spaces and
all
so
right
on.
We'll take this call. Do you have a question for Dr. Kennedy?
Yes. My name is Larry Newsom. I'm a resident up at Muir Hall, Dr. Kennedy. And I have three questions for you, if I may. One is I hear quite a bit of talk about the trustees. I'd like to know who the trustees are and what their function is exactly, you know, concerning this college, the basic function.
OK, Okay, you want to give me all three? Maybe I can answer them all.
Well, who the trustees are, and there are two questions that I always hear around here. One is concerning the closed door policy in the dorms, if there's anything that can be done to change that. The other is fundraising. For instance, if a dorm needed money to put on a function, how come they can't, you know, hold a sale or something like that to raise the funds?
Well, okay, let me try them in that order. The first question about who are the trustees of the state college system? There are 21 people on the Board of Trustees, and the board was set up in 1961 by the Donahue Higher Education Act, which then replaced the State Board of Education as the administrative unit over the state college. Of these 21 trustees, 16 are appointed by the governor of the state of California. And so, since this Board of Trustees started back in 1961, they were, the first go-around, all appointed, all 16 were appointed by Governor Brown. They were appointed for 8-year terms, and so there, and at the beginning, there was some people who were appointed for less than 8-year terms, 4-year terms, 6-year terms, and then 8-year terms, so that the Governor Reagan has had an opportunity to now appoint members of the board. And as I understand it, as I recall back over it, about half of the 16 members of the board, the appointed members of the board, are Brown appointees, and about half are Reagan appointees. The other members of the board include the governor, the lieutenant governor, the speaker of the house, the chancellor, and the superintendent of public instruction, for a total of 21 members, if I named those off properly. That's who they are. What they do is that they, in fact, administer the 19 state colleges in the state college system. And this system of higher education in California, the state colleges, is the largest single system of higher education in the Western world. There's no other system of higher education, including that of New York State,
that's larger than that of the
state college system. It's a very difficult job for the trustees to administer these 19 colleges, stretched from San Diego to Humboldt.
I guess so.
Dormitory closed door policy. I think you need to explain, it needs to be explained that there is not, in fact, a closed door policy, that there is, in fact,
An open-door policy, that's what I meant.
That's right. There is, in fact, an open-door policy, which means that students who wish to entertain persons of the opposite sex in their, shall I call it a bedroom?
Bedroom, if you prefer.
Right. I call it a bedroom. Wish to entertain persons of the opposite sex in their bedroom are required by college policy to leave the door wide open, and we do not prevent them, however, from visiting. There are definite visiting hours, and each of the halls have arranged for different hours for visiting. Now, I have had interesting proposals made to me about why it is that they want to close the door. why are you laughing, you know? I mean, the proposal to close the door always comes from someone who says, that the reason I want to close the door is my girlfriend and I enjoy hi-fi music. Mm-hmm. And when we want play our hi-fi music, we don't want to disturb the people in the room next door, and so we want to shut the door.
Well, I know other reasons for it.
Well, all right, but that, let me finish why I think that is an interesting reason, because out of these same dormitories, I hear criticisms all the time that the walls are so thin that you can hear people next door talking all the time, you know. And so, really, closing the door isn't going to stop the sound of the music going from one dormitory, from one dorm to the other. Well, it's a kind of a knotty question, and I realize that many colleges have become very permissive on this, to the extent that they've gone much further than even the business of leaving, than, let's say, permitting the doors to be closed. They have the men and the women living not only in the same dormitories as we do in Yosemite, but in separate units, but also in the same units and sometimes on the same floors. This is all very well and good for those people who want to do it that way, but I suggest that when they want to do it that way, that they move off campus, because that's the way they do it off campus.
Yeah, well, you mean there's no chance of the college changing its policy, even if the majority of students are in favor of that?
Well, now, what if you were to say that the majority of students at this campus were in favor of smoking marijuana? What should I do about that?
Well, right there, you're off into something else again, sir, because that involves civil law. This is a college policy that we're speaking of now.
Well,
you know,
let
and
me
that
try
can
to
be
find.
Changed.
Let me. You're too sharp for me. Let me try to find some analogy that's a little better. What if students said that, in terms of college policy, that majority of the students never wanted us to have broccoli served in the cafeteria? Should I, in fact, make sure that we never serve broccoli in the cafeteria?
No, but...
Well, really what I'm getting at is that I can't administer the institution on the basis of a majority vote of the students. The majority vote of the students could decide that they don't want to take math. A majority vote of the students could decide that physics is for the birds. Or that a majority vote of the students could decide almost anything.
No, well, that's simplifying it a little bit too much. I mean, I think most students have, you know, have it in their heads that there are certain limits.
Well, now, let me ask you this question. What do you think about the young students who come to live in the dormitories, young men and women who are in the neighborhood of 17, 18 years of age, and their parents, in fact, say that they want them to live in the dormitory because this is the first time away from home for these young people. And I, each year at freshman orientation during WOW Week, I talk to approximately 800 of these parents who come here particularly to hear something about the college. I am impressed with the fact that these parents still have a tremendous amount of interest in what goes on the campus in terms of the moral values that their students bring to the campus and other issues like this. I would say that instead of having a vote of the students make the decision, let's have a vote of those people who pay for the room and board.
Yeah, so, well, I guess you could look at it that way also, but I thought that as long as the young men and women on this campus are here to learn how to become young men and women, that they should be given a little more responsibility in saying
right.
What they want also.
Now, let me say that we're giving them this responsibility because basically, one of the things that we are saying about this is that, let me put it in these terms. I had four children of my own, all grown, graduated from college, and now I have three grandchildren. Two of these were girls. And when we lived here in San Luis Obispo, they were very good-looking young ladies. There were a lot of boys that used to come visiting. At no time did I suggest that these girls entertain their boyfriends in their bedroom. But in fact, we had a front room. And in fact, the front room was the appropriate place for this entertainment to take place. Now, in the mountain dormitories, with the exception of the five over in the Lassen Whitney area, they all have what we call front rooms. Furthermore, as of January the 2nd, God willing, we will have a college union that will open, and it has been billed by the students and by everybody that's had anything to do with the planning of this as the front room, the living room, so to speak, of the campus. And I hope that one of these days when this happens, that a great deal of this compatibility of entertainment that you're talking about between the male and the female will take place over in the college union.
Yes,
they can listen to hi-fi, they're going to have listening rooms, they're going to have all kinds. It will be a great experience, and I think that this is not saying that I am unwilling for these young people to have the experience of living and acting responsibly. Living and acting responsibly also means living and acting responsibly within rules set down for the purpose of guidance and for the purpose of administering different programs.
Yes.
Okay? Now, the last one, fundraising. The residence halls really are related in many respects, and I'm not sure how this ties into the ASI, but the ASI codes have a fundraising procedure. And I would have to, ask that you take this up with someone else like Dean Lawson, or Paul Bankey, the president of the student body, and so on, regarding fundraising activities on the campus for these clubs.
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you for calling. Goodbye. Our number here is 546-2289. It's Study Break. We have as our guest tonight Dr. Robert E. Kennedy, the president of Cal Poly. And he had brought up some interesting points, and I'm glad we had the explanation of the trustees. We were talking about parking, Dr. Kennedy. Let's get back to that. You said you just had...
Well, we have about, at the present time, in terms of our spaces on campus, we have about 5,000 spaces available for cars. But on the other hand, you have to remember that the students and the faculty members do not stay on the campus all the time, and so there's a rotation on this.
I think we have another call for Study Break. You have a question for Dr. Kennedy.
Yes. In Tuesday's Mustang Daily, they had an article about campus annexation possible, where San Luis Obispo would annex the campus. And I was wondering, it's kind of vague, the article. It doesn't really say which way it would work for San Luis Obispo. What really is the college supposed to get out of this?
Well, that's a very good question, and when I am absolutely certain of the answer to that, we will proceed a little faster. And you say that, you know, it was a little vague. That's true. It's a little vague, and we are exploring this possibility. This idea of the annexation of Cal Poly into the city of San Luis Obispo was first proposed by City Councilman Emmons Blake, who is a Cal Poly graduate and has a great deal of respect and interest in Cal Poly. He is not doing it in any way to try and to create problems for Cal Poly, but he had an idea, and we've explored it, and it is a very interesting one. The state of California does, in fact, provide for every city a certain percentages of the taxes raised on automobiles, gasoline taxes, cigarette taxes, etc., and it's returned to the cities on a per capita basis, the basis of the numbers of people who are in fact residents of the city. If Cal Poly goes into the city, we would have presently, let's say it would add about 2,200 and so additional residents to the city of San Luis Obispo. 2 years from now, when we have, we hope, a new residence hall on campus, it would be maybe in the neighborhood of 2,600 or 2,800 students who would live on campus. And that would increase the amount of revenue that the state would pay from these taxes to the city of San Luis Obispo. Now, it was the proposal that a large percentage of this additional revenue the city would get would go into a fund that would be set aside in which there would be some kind of a joint powers agreement between the city and the college, and that arrangement then would make it possible for the college and the city to agree that the monies could be spent for certain projects. Let's assume, for example, that we decided that the parking that we were talking about a moment ago was a serious one, and that maybe buses would help, and since the city doesn't have a bus service, that maybe the school and the city could go together, the bus service, and we could use this money, and it would be a great help for both the city and the college.
Excuse me a second, Dr. Kennedy. I just wanted to say that it's 8:30. You're listening to KCPR in San Luis Obispo.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to know that that's 8:30. Try to figure out other projects that could be financed, or one of the ones that has been especially pointed out is an extension or an addition to our stadium. As you probably know, if you've been to any football games lately, our stadium doesn't hold the crowd very effectively. The state of California will not spend any additional funds for a stadium, nor for the lights for a stadium, nor for any improvements for the stadium. The student body could, but in effect, the student body's resources would be badly depleted if we tried to use, say, $500,000 to do this. Now, maybe the city and the college could go together with, say, $80,000 a year that might be coming into the city from this special fund, into this special fund. One of the things could be that we could borrow money through revenue bonding, and we could use some of this revenue to reimburse or to pay back. It would be a guarantee. This is maybe the main thing that we would, why we would consider going into the city. So far as I know, there are no restrictions. In other words, the city police department does not have to come out on the campus. The fire department doesn't have to come out on the campus. None of these kinds of things would create any problems for the city. Okay?
Okay. I'd also like to know, does this include the entire campus area, all the hill, the property way back in the hills and everything like this, or?
Well, we haven't really worked that out. We're still working on that little nitty-gritty of what advantage is it going to be to Cal Poly. Once we decide that, and really the area that the city is interested in, to tell you the truth, they would probably, if for their purposes, they just go down Grand Avenue and make a kind of a circle back of the dormitories and have one long island. That would be all they would be interested in. I don't think that was necessarily the way it would work, but that would do the trick for them, you see. Just to include the dormitories would, in fact, give them the additional revenue.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Kenny.
Thank you very much for calling. The number is 546-2289. It's Study Break. We're talking with Dr. Robert Kennedy. On this annexation thing, Dr. Kennedy, where does it now stand? Is it being studied in the legal departments? And when is there any possible date that can be set? Not anything specific, but a day that you can look forward to some kind of decision in 2 years, a year, or something like that?
Well, I would say that the date is a lot closer than that. We have one of the legal members, one of the members of the legal staff of the chancellor has been assigned to assist us on the legal aspects of this. I imagine that within several months that person and the legal staff of the city will have pretty well set forth all the advantages, disadvantages, the problems related to a joint powers agreement. These things I think will all be set forth. I would say that before the beginning of the next academic year, we certainly would be in a position to know which way we're going on this thing. It does not take much action after that, basically, as I understand it, since this is a single unit. It is not made up of a lot of different units like a residential neighborhood where a lot of people have to agree. All that has to be done here is that on this campus, I have to get sufficient agreement from the various consultative bodies, including the Academic Senate and the Staff Senate and the student body with whom I would consult, an understanding of this thing, and then I would recommend it to the trustees. If, in fact, the trustees approved it, and they would approve it if our legal staff down there recommended it, that would be all it would take.
Okay. I believe we have a call. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Dr. Kennedy, you asked a little while ago about the door policy.
The open or closed door
policy?
Yeah,
the door policy. My name is Ian Gregg and I live in Whitney Hall. Now, as you're aware, our doors open outside.
Yes, I realize that. In fact, I tried to make an exception to the Whitney Lassen complex there.
And, I'll give you an example. Only two nights ago, a lady came to visit my roommate and I, who, believe me, is old enough to be my mother, and the wind was howling and it was cold, and we were informed that we still had to keep the door wide open, and papers were blowing all over the place. Now, don't you think this is carrying things to an extent?
That's pretty ridiculous, and I'm glad you pointed it out to me, and I think that perhaps that local autonomy is something that I keep fighting for on behalf of Cal Poly, and you've made a very good point. I shall talk to the Dean of Students and to some other people about the particular problem that your dormitories, in fact, have. I thank you very much for that information. I could visualize this lady that's as old as your grandmother with that cold wind blowing in off of the street out there. I imagine it was an unpleasant situation. And thank you very much for telling me about it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. The number is 546-2289 at Study Break. And if you have a question, you have just seen possibly a good thing that happened. A fella had a problem, and he talked to the man. So you give us a call at 546-2289, and possibly you can ask Dr. Kennedy. We have a call already. Okay, do you have a question? Yes, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, yes, do you have a question?
I'd like to ask Dr. Kennedy why he's not using his house there on campus, and what are they going to do with the house?
Well, that's a very good question. Well, you know, I could be facetious and say the reason I'm not using it is because it isn't finished yet. And that is true. But One of the reasons that it is not finished yet is that because I have asked the School of Architecture to do some additional things to the structure so that we could in fact use it for other than a president's residence. And this will take quite a little while to explain it all, and so I'm not going to try and go into great detail. But Mrs. Kennedy and I have lived in San Luis Obispo for approximately 30 years. 20 years ago, a student architect designed a home for us in San Luis Obispo, and we built it. At the time it was built, it was considered to be one of the most modern houses ever built in San Luis Obispo, and if you would like to come and visit us sometime, you'll find out that things aren't much different in San Luis Obispo. It's still one of the very most modern houses, and we're not too anxious to move from that house because we like it. While I had been asked, well, let me put it like this. When I became president in May of 1967, one of the first questions I asked the chancellor, who was my immediate superior, and I asked if he had any objection if I had the president's residence remodeled for a number of other possible purposes, and I listed eight that had been given to me by various people as possible uses. And he at that time suggested that he would prefer that I live in it, and for a very simple reason. He was at that time trying to get money from the legislature so that they would build homes for all of the presidents on all of the state colleges, on the campuses of all of the state colleges. And he felt that if I were house was available, did not live in the house, that this would in fact, quote, pull the rug out from under the proposal. And I understood it. And so I said I would do that. But that the house was 45 years old, it had never been remodeled, it was not modernized, you turned the showers on upstairs, you couldn't get water out of them, it was in the kind of condition that would make you feel like that it ought to be remodeled. And so arrangements were made and we turned it over to the School of Architecture, and they have in fact done a fabulous job on a learning by doing situation. In the meantime, it has become such a fine facility for a possible what I call a special educational center for some special things that the students and the faculty will be able to do together in that facility in the sense of special relevant educational programs related to community and to the college, that I asked the chancellor again just a few months ago if he still felt, as he had felt in 1967, about having houses for all the presidents and getting money from the legislature. And he looked at me kind of quizzically, and he said, well, you know that the legislature is not about ready to give us any money now to build homes for state college presidents. And I had suspected that. And so, in fact, he has given me permission to go ahead with the plans. And I have met with a number of people. We've got a consultation committee working on it. It includes some students, faculty, and staff members. And we are developing a program, and that is going to be, I hope, one of the very fine focal points on this campus in the years to come that will be known as a great place where faculty and students are going to be able to study together. Not just in a lecture situation, but in seminars where they will be relating themselves to the community and the community problems. I don't just mean San Luis Obispo as a community. I mean the community, any place outside the campus. We'll get private funding. We've already got a couple of donors interested so that we'll have honorariums. We'll be able to bring in guest lecturers, guest speakers, outstanding teachers that can maybe spend a week on campus helping students in a particular area. This is what we hope to do with it, and we also hope, and you maybe saw that story in the paper the other day, the school paper, about the hill behind the home. It's a great natural green spot, and tied into that is the thing we call Poly Gardens, and we're going to make that available so students and there will be able to, people will be able to schedule it and hold certain kinds of activities there. Okay, do you think the president ought to live there? We ought to use it like I'm talking about.
I'm not sure, really. I just want to know your viewpoint on the situation. And
well,
just
it's interesting.
Kind of explained it.
There's mixed feelings. I've had a number of students say, really, President Kennedy, we think you ought to live there. And I really feel that the facility is such a great facility for a really educational experience that I think it would be a shame for just Mrs. Kennedy and I to kind of knock around in that house all by ourselves, you know?
So as long as you're present, you don't believe you'll ever use it for your home?
No, I think that would be a good statement, but let me put it like this. I have no intention of doing anything to it in terms of the utilization that would preclude my successor from turning it back into a home.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. The number is 546-2289 at KCPR, and we're on a study break talking tonight with Dr. Robert Kennedy, the president of Cal Poly. Some people have given us some good questions, and the calls are keeping right on ringing our telephone, so I think we have another one. Do you have a question for Dr. Kennedy?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Go right.
Dr. Kennedy, I feel actually that your response on the dormitory open door policy was, in essence, a cop-out. I would like to know if you were presented with a petition signed by a majority of dormitory residents which feel that a change in regulations would more fully reflect their feelings.
It wasn't a cop-out. It wasn't a cop-out. And let me say this way. I already received the recommendation, and I denied it.
But
I didn't receive it in the form of a petition. I received it as a recommendation of the residence hall dormitory government groups. They presented their case, I reviewed it, and I denied the request.
That may be true, but
well,
what about
that is,
a petition
that isn't a
turned in?
Pardon?
What about if a petition was filed with you requesting this? You know, this would be the feeling of a majority of students.
I really do feel that the feeling of a majority of students would have to be honored. I'll tell you what I'll do with it. If I get a petition like that, I will go through the petition and I will take off of that petition the names of every student that is under 21 years of age, and I will send send to the parents of those students a questionnaire asking them what in fact they want to do regarding this issue, where in fact they are paying for the room and board, or the room in this case maybe, of that particular student. I don't intend to for a minor to make the decision.
But,
other than the decision that I've already made, which I don't intend to have a closed door policy.
But the parents are the ones that are living here. It's the students.
Oh, I know, but I'm talking about those students who you're talking about. That if a majority of students living here want something, then I in fact should comply with it. And I'm saying to you that if the majority of students that you're talking about were in fact paying their own way, that they were in fact not underage, and that their parents weren't paying for them to go to school, that this might be a completely different thing than the point I'm making. In other words, these people who are under 21 years of age, whose parents are paying for them to go to school and to live in a dormitory on campus, the parents have some say in what, in fact, should be the customs on the campus, primarily because that was the assumption that they made when they sent the student here.
That may be true also, but you are in essence saying that, yes, you are old enough to go to school and accept responsibility, but we're still going to play mommy and daddy over you and enforce your life and tell you how to live.
Well, the way you put it makes it, you know, I mean, I hardly can say yes, that's what I'm going to do. But I think that it's very difficult for me to debate this issue with you on the air. I mean, it would be a lot better if we were discussing this with a larger group and with people other than those of your persuasion. I mean, you make it sound as though you're the only one who feels this way.
No, that's far from true. I know that.
Or that there are no people who feel the other way.
Well, I'm sure there are, but if there was, in fact, a change, there wouldn't be anything saying that students who do feel the other way couldn't live the other way, you know?
Well, I've had some interesting rebuttals to that argument regarding, and from some young girls who have indicated that one of the problems is that, and this is an interesting one, the psychology of it may be hard for you to grasp, but one of the problems is a young girl under 18 years of age, or 18 or thereabouts, who finds that all of her roommates are having boyfriends up there with the doors closed, finds herself in a very difficult position. If she doesn't start this practice pretty quick, somebody's going to think that she's a cop-out.
Well, if she stands up for her rights and her own beliefs, no one should actually feel she is a cop-out.
Well,
and if she can't stand up for her own beliefs, then she has no business being in college.
Well, that's a judgment, I will say. That's a judgment that we can't necessarily make. She can do what she wants to do, but I think we ought to go on to another area. We've discussed that one. I'm sure there are other calls coming in. Dr. Kennedy, we've gotten word in the last couple of days that people will soon be able to change their majors around campus. Can you quickly comment on that before we have another call?
Well, yes. The students have always been able to change their majors, of course, but one of the problems has been in this last go-around, because of our post-quota system, we did in fact send out cards at the time students were registering saying that they had to stay for two quarters in the major which they registered, and that they, while they were in those in that major or those majors, that they had to take the curriculum that was outlined in the catalog. Well, we've discovered that there are quite a few students who are pretty unhappy about the situation now, and that they are not doing well, and we've decided that some of these students, in fact, should be given the privilege right now to go ahead and change. And so, as I understand it, they have up until December 1st to change. And in fact, we've indicated that they should be able to change even if they have less than a 2.0 GPA, which they were not able to do before.
I believe we have another caller. Do you have a question?
Yes. First, on the housing thing, I have one possible solution. I don't know how practical it is, but supposing they opened certain dorms for a closed door and certain dorms for an open door, depending on whether you were a minor, you had a note from your parent or something like this. In other words, if you're 21 and you want to have a closed door policy, you live in one particular dorm or maybe two if there's enough people.
Isn't that about what they're doing at San Diego State?
Well, you see, they have just a few dorms at San Diego State that are there, and then they have a lot of off-campus, real close, non-related housing, and it's kind of like the Stener Glen Tropicana situation, in which you hear all kinds of things about what they're doing at various campuses, but they don't always apply to all of the residence halls. So I can't really answer that question about San Diego State now, but I would say that in answer to the question about could we, in fact, have different rules governing the situation in different dorms, the answer is yes. And I think maybe that there's obviously enough interest in this that we will reconsider the situation. I'm obviously going to have to reconsider it in connection with Whitney. So we'll reconsider it in connection with all the rest.
I have another question also. I guess it's a question. How about the possibility of a multi-level parking garage for the parking situation?
Well, that's fine, except that the problem has to do with cost. As you probably realize, that a multi-level garage is a much more expensive deal than just leveling off a lot and surfacing it. The State College system in building these lots have done that in some campuses in the urban centers where land costs were prohibitive or not available, and they have used, and it's been very expensive. They have some at San Jose and some at San Francisco State, for example. I've parked in both of these, and they are rather expensive structures, and I don't think the entire system can afford to do it. Now, it's possible that someday on this campus there may be at least one or two, at least two-level parking areas. We have a couple of them that we have in mind for our master plan now, where it would be quite simple to have a second level, because one level, one part of the road entrance would be high enough that it could go off onto a second level of a parking structure. And we probably will do something like this. But at the present time, one of our problems has to do with the lack of financing for many things, including the completion of our road circuit, the outer perimeter road, the connection of California Boulevard, the development of the parking lot over there by the baseball diamond. All of these things are at the moment being held up because of lack of funds.
Well, I was talking to one of the security officers today, and he was telling me that the parking lot S2 next to the health center was in the plans for the future to be eliminated and something built on that area.
But it won't be
until, you see, these kings come incrementally, and he knows it too, but he probably just didn't think to tell you about it. That won't happen until there's an expansion of the parking lots in another area, you see.
Yeah, right. Well, I know they're giving more tickets in that lot because they've opened the new lot next to the airport. And, it seems like they're just moving the parking lots farther out, which is...
Well, do you realize that the parking lot just below the airport, as you put it, is only 3 blocks from the library?
Mm-hmm.
3 city blocks from the library.
Right.
Well, most places that I know of, parking within 3 blocks of your destination or the center of the campus isn't too bad.
Yeah, well, I'll admit it, I'm lazy.
Yeah. Glad to see somebody agrees with me.
All right, well, thank you very much, Dr. Kennedy. All right,
thank you for calling. We were in Dr. Kennedy's office earlier this afternoon, and he showed us some pictures taken at, I believe, 10:30 in the morning on a Thursday of parking spaces available on campus. Dr. Kennedy, if to make the students use parking lots, say, above the dorms or out on Grand Avenue, what about a tram service or some kind of busing into the center of campus? Is this in the works or planning?
Yes, it's in the planning, and one of the things that we probably will have eventually, and I may as well divulge the information.